it's very sad when Germany makes a massive oil and gas deal with Russia, where you're supposed to be guarding against Russia, and Germany goes out and pays billions and billions of dollars a year to Russia. So we're protecting Germany, we're protecting France, we're protecting all of these countries, and then numerous of the countries go out and make a pipeline deal with Russia, where they're paying billions of dollars into the coffers of Russia. So we're supposed to protect you against Russia, but they're paying billions of dollars to Russia, and I think that's very inappropriate.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
Well, doing very well. Good. And our viewers just saw our little clip. You know, I've been anxious in my own mind to clarify the Trump position on NATO. And so we have this clip now. Now I have to figure out, do I really understand Trump's position on NATO? Yeah. It's challenging to figure it out because, you know, a few things he says makes a lot of sense and they're logical. Why are we paying all these bills? I've said that for years. Of course, my conclusion was, why don't we get out of NATO? Yeah. They don't appropriate the money. Germany doesn't appropriate the money and NATO doesn't. But and Trump has said that, you know, at the beginning, let's just get out of NATO. But I don't think he hasn't been precise, but he's very precise when he has something very annoying than when he spotted. Why are we paying more than the others and why are we taking care of that? But this thing right now that he's concentrating on is why are we paying for Germany's defense at the same time, you know, against Russia, because the Russians are the bad guys. And we pay for that, and we want this strong NATO position there. At the same time, they're blaming Russia for all this. So I and Trump's of course complaint is they trade with Russia. Of course, you know, our argument is trade is good. Trade is more for peace, and it makes more sense, and things balance out. But it doesn't seem to. I don't think the president has accepted that basic principle, because sometimes trade more, trade less. But this certainly gives us a challenge to try to sort all this out. But it's important, too, because, I think we should just be out of all that. We wouldn't have to worry about some of this diplomatic stuff that seems to aggravate. And I think the tone doesn't help anybody. And the policies don't change. It sort of makes it more confusing. But anyway, this is what we have. And maybe you could explain to me exactly what Mr. Trump is doing. And it's fascinating. I'm afraid, though, it's serious, and we can't make light of it.
Yeah, it's true. And Trump seems to get half of it right all the time. And he is a bull in a china shop, and sometimes that can be amusing. And in this case, you know, he captures the duplicitousness of the Germans perfectly. You know, they on the one hand, they want us to protect them against a Russian invasion. Russia's, you know, just poised to go and take over Germany. On the other hand, it's going to send them billions of dollars. If you really thought a country was going to attack you, why would you enrich their economy to enable them to better do that? It doesn't make any sense. And just in that sentence, he pointed out, and to watch Jens Stoltenberg sit there and having to nod his head while he's drinking his orange juice, it's just a perfect sort of scenario. Of course, we'll talk about the conclusions being wrong, but that was that was classic Trump, I think.
Yeah, and he called them hypocrites for what they do. They have to prepare for war, and we have to help them. At the same time, they're getting economic benefits. But, Trump is often on again about how we should deal with Russia. But even recently, he mentioned the Russian aggression, and we have to deal with that. But what do we do? We do business with the Russians. We can't even make our own missiles that we need. So these fancy missiles are bought from Russia. And there was a few months ago, I think they talked about, well, let's buy less of these. But they say, well, we can't make it. It's going to take us years to learn how to make the missiles that we buy from Russia.
Oh, for the and space we, station, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And they were doing this, and we can't renege. We can't back off. And the contract is up we've agreed to buy them up until 2025. So if we're going to stick to our agreement, we're in business with them for a long time. So the whole thing is just so messy. But I think there's a strong motivation by some lobbyists in Washington that says that, you know, we're not, our goal is not consistency and making everybody happy on our arguments. Our goal is, Mr. President, get us so we can sell liquid nitrogen gas to Europe.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make economic sense. Doesn't it make sense in getting natural gas? The pipeline is open now from Russia to Europe. Yeah. And it has to be cheaper. How can we compete with them? But that's what they're complaining about. We want to, that's their goal. We want to sell natural gas to Europeans. Yeah.
But the markets speak. I mean, the markets understand that Russia is less a threat to Europe than higher gas prices, higher LNG prices. So, you know, they've made a risk assessment. Now, Merkel responded to Trump's goading. They have a funny relationship. But she said, I have myself experienced how a part of Germany was controlled by the Soviet Union. I'm very happy today that we're united in freedom. Because of that, we can make our own independent policies and make independent decisions. Because he claimed that, you know, they're under the boot of Russia. But, you know, the case is also true that the U.S. is also independent. We can also make our own independent decisions. So if Germany makes its own independent decisions that Russia is not a threat by its behavior, by its market behavior, then we should make our own conclusions accordingly.
And so much of the motivation is, of course, Russia has to be the bad guy, and we have to defend Europe against Russia. But Russia, you know, hasn't shown any signs that they're about to invade Europe. So this is not going to be easy to resolve, because I think the threat isn't outside these countries or even outside the European Union. I think the real threat to peace and tranquility and prosperity in Europe and probably in this country, too, is the economic factors. When you think about the EU is very, very fragile. NATO is very fragile, too, which doesn't worry me. And it doesn't worry me that the EU is fragile. But it's fragile, but it's going to be in the midst of the real arguments in the tenses comes from migration, which we have some responsibility for causing, you know, because they're coming from the Middle East, and there would have been a lot less fighting and killing in the Middle East if we hadn't been the champions of overthrowing these governments. And so this is an unintended consequence, or, it's happening because of that. But I think that internal strife, where there's going to be civil strife in these various countries, and it's already breaking out, just like in our country, and we're not as bad off as they are in Europe, you know, with these conflicts, with what's going on when you have mass migrations into countries that are socialistic and they're all bankrupt. Yeah. You know, there's no easy out for this.
And you know, Merkel has been forced to compromise with her own partner, the CSU, in Bavaria, just to preserve her slot. You know, they've decided to back off a little bit about forcing other European countries to accept a bunch of migrants, because, you know, there's been a revolt among the Visegrad 4 countries in former Central and Eastern Europe. Hungary, Poland, Czechs, and the Slovaks have said, no way, we are not going to do this. And even the Austrians, to a degree, now that they have more of a right-wing government, right-wing populist government, they said, no way, we're not going to do this, we're not going to accept it. And it really threatened to pull the EU apart and to destroy her government, so she's had to back down off this quite a bit.
And I don't see any solution there. I think our responsibility, if we have the political responsibility, it's more for the American policy. And not only is our answer to the mess with NATO and the confusion there is just get out of NATO and come home, at the same time, you know, quit these wars. But then the consequences are still there. So they say, oh, no, that'll make things worse. Well, it's going to continue to make it worse, and we are going to be bankrupt, and everything is going to get worse if we don't change policy.
That's true, and I would do a little nasty aside, because it's ironic that Merkel is talking about herself as a victim of being occupied by the Soviet Union, because as you may remember, she was a propaganda secretary for the East German Communist Party, Communist Youth Movement. So she actually helped the occupiers at the time, so she shouldn't be playing the victim. But, you know, the countries determine their own risk factors, and they've determined, really, by the way that their spending behaviors, by their defense postures, that they're really not under threat from Russia. We have actually a JPEG, if we can put it up. This is what Trump is so ticked off about, that they're just not spending any money. And even the slight increase in spending over the last year is not significant. The U.S., well, they've determined they should spend at least 2.0% of their GDP on the military, and just nobody's doing it. Greece is doing it. I think Romania is getting close. Poland is close. But these are pretty weak numbers when you think about how much the U.S. spends, 4.2, 4.3% of a much larger GDP on its military. These countries really aren't spending what they think because they don't feel that there's a threat.
Right. And you know, I was just thinking while you were saying that, what would the world be like if all the countries benefited by not paying 1 cent into NATO and this money all went back into their domestic economy? But it would depend on how it would happen. Now, if the liberals took it and say, well, good, we're going to double the size of our welfare state. Or if somebody else says, why don't we think of a different policy on economics and the real wealth is coming back and we won't have to depend on debt and paying interest, maybe we could get real growth again. But I don't think that's likely to happen because I think we're really locked into this internationalism. And I think Trump isn't strong for this idea of getting rid of NATO, though he said that, and he's challenging. He may end up getting rid of NATO. He may be contributing to it. But it seems to me like he's able to use this for political reasons, you know, the hypocrisy issue, without worrying about our own hypocrisy, you know, whether it comes to war or trade. So I think that there's so much better ways of spending all that money, not only our money, but all that money. But the Europeans aren't going to want us to leave. I think they can fight and fume. But basically, you know, they have some economic benefits by us spending all our money over there. Mm-hmm. And they probably do well. We're not going to spend it. We're not worried that much about the Russians. But who knows? A little bit of extra protection is okay. But I think this problem is going to get much worse. The EU is going to get more complex, as well as NATO and all this. And until we decide and others decide that this is not the way to go, this internationalism, it's sort of like the League of Nations didn't work out so well. Yeah. And I don't think this league is working out so well either.
Well, you make a great point about cutting out the middleman, because NATO is just unfolding its new multi-billion dollar headquarters. It looks like a big, huge claw. Uh-huh. But they're spending billions of dollars on their headquarters, billions of dollars on bureaucrats, billions of dollars on propaganda. You know, NATO is a big contributor to the Atlantic Council, which we've talked about on this show. Different organizations and pseudo-NGOs that are putting out a lot of anti-Russia propaganda, which feeds more spending, you know, and the whole sort of thing. But when it comes to NATO, really, what is the use of NATO? NATO came to our aid and helped us with Afghanistan. Well, that hasn't worked out that well. NATO was behind the Libya operation. Well, that's a real success. You know, NATO's been involved in so many of these things where we've just flat out lost. You know, so what's the point?
Well, the point at the beginning was much clearer, and that was they were still a Soviet empire, and they were a lot more aggressive than Russia is today. And even though there were good libertarian conservatives that argued back then, not to do it, that's not the way to go, because it's not going to be really helpful. But today, the conditions are quite different, and I think especially in the last 2-3 decades, it's been a search for a monster to destroy. They're looking for an enemy, because it was easy when the Soviets were the enemy, but now they don't have one, and that's why they don't have a purpose, and that's why I think they're floundering around and nobody knows what they're supposed to do, and they come up with these silly arguments, and then it affects trade policy too. Trade is involved here too. Matter of fact, Trump talks about trade. Why are you buying oil from why are you getting gas from Russia, you know? And here they're doing exactly the opposite. The more they do, the better. I remember when we talked so much about Ukraine and when we were participating in a coup there. And I said, I can't imagine the Europeans going along with this, because there's so much trade going on now. And there is that. Matter of fact, that European trade is reflective in their comments about what to do with Iran, because the Europeans are much more anxious to trade and deal with Iran than we are. So the trade policy is instrumental in this so-called military stuff, but there's a lot of misunderstanding, and it's been pointed out so much. If you read David Stockman, he'll explain why he doesn't think, he doesn't mince his words, why he doesn't think Trump really understands, you know, economic policy. And I happen to think that David Stockman understands a lot about economic policy.
You know, it's funny, you mentioned it before the show, but a lot of the times what the U.S. accuses countries of doing, we actually do ourselves in spades. You talk about, remember our new national security strategy pointed out that Russia and China were our new adversaries. We've got to refocus on those guys. But how much trade do we do with China? Aren't we doing with China what we're accusing Germany of doing with Russia?
You know, David Stockman in a recent article pointed out that in 1990, the average tariff in China was 30%. It's 3.5% now, and yet they've been made the monsters, you know. And it just is so difficult, and I've talked about it a lot, and David Stockman talks about it, in that there's a monetary issue here, you know, and the balance of payments is important. It's just not the trade going back and forth, because it all comes back. It's the money spent, and the dollars have to be balanced. But the big thing is when one country can print the money of the world and spend at will, it does create trade imbalances. And then they have to blame the countries, and rather than blaming the monetary policies that we follow.
Exactly. Well, I would just conclude by saying Trump is right and wrong on NATO. He's right that the countries are not ponying up the money that he thinks they should. The question that Dr. Paul started the show with, would, if they did pony up, would he be okay with that? Does the U.S. just want to be in charge of NATO and that would be fine? You know, that's, in a way, it's beside the point. They're not ponying up because they obviously don't see a threat. If we saw a threat to our, from our neighbor, we would find some way of addressing the threat. They're not. So it means that NATO, despite all of its hashtags about we're in this together and everything during this, it's completely outdated. We should be completely out of it. We're going to talk about this, by the way, on August 18th in Washington, D.C. Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson will be with us giving a talk at our annual conference. He was Colin Powell's chief of staff. He now teaches at William & Mary down in Williamsburg. Terrific, terrific military career. He's got some great insights. You can get your tickets at ronpaulinstitute.org/conference to see Colonel Wilkerson and many other great speakers on this exact topic.
Very good, Daniel. And I might just conclude, as I so often do, with a statement about why free trade can answer a lot of our questions. There's a lot of confusion here in non-intervention, and interventionism provides it both in economics and in foreign policy. And that's what we need to do. To sort this out and manage this better is impossible. You just can't do it. It's sort of like managing the economy in the Keynesian model and deciding how much money there should be and what the interest rate should be, and debt doesn't matter. It doesn't work. It always fails, and we're seeing the conclusion of this. It's coming to an end. So what we have to realize is that it is a system that is doomed to fail. We can't continue it, and the answer to this confusion on foreign policy and trade policy is looking to the principles of liberty, free trade, private property ownership, and stay out of the affairs, internal affairs of other nations. That would go a long way to moving the world to peace and prosperity. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Tune back soon.